watching you on TV.
Oh, hell yeah.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 395, the week of February 21st, 2022. I am Bank 71, David T. Cole, and I'm here with multi-use brooch, Sarah D. Bunting.
And it's a bomb, and it's bees!
Chandelier smasher, Tara Ariano.
The Phantom of the Opera is here inside the bank.
And asymmetrical hairstyle, Crystal Farmer.
From this angle, I'm all business. From this angle, I'm wild and unpredictable.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, she is the co-host of the 2 Cents Plus Tax podcast and a listener of this podcast. It's Crystal Farmer. Crystal! Ooh,
Crystal! Oh,
it's me!
Yay!
There it is.
We are here to talk about the new NBC drama, The Endgame.
Point of order.
Let the wide stick give you the edge. Speed Stick Super Dry Antiperspirant.
The Endgame.
Thank you.
Yeah, fair.
Here's what it's about. Three very highly placed figures in U.S. federal law enforcement supervise the delivery to a secure facility of an extremely elegant but apparently even more extremely dangerous detainee named Elena Fedorova, played by Marina Baccarin from the Homeland. They've barely started talking to her before banks around New York start getting taken over by her very well-prepared crews. FBI agent Val Turner, Ryan Michelle Bathe, has just come from a meeting where her husband Owen, a former federal agent incarcerated for stealing drug money, has told her he wants a divorce. Val seems to know more about Elena's operations than anyone else, but she's being sidelined on cases because of the taint of Owen's conviction, even though she was the one who turned him in. As the very long day goes on, more banks fall, and we start to get a somewhat clearer picture of what Elena, aka Snow White, is actually after. This show was created by Nicholas Wooten, previously of Scorpion and Golden Boy. Remember that show Golden Boy that we watched one episode of with Theo James, Mr. Pamuk? And 1 million years ago, he also worked on Blind Justice with Ron Eldard, Sarah, and NYPD Blue.
That's a shame for a bunch of reasons.
Yeah. His co-creator is Jake Coburn, ex of Arrow and Quantico, and though he also worked on My Beloved Dynasty, only as a consulting producer, so I don't feel like it counts. It was also, the pilot was directed by Justin Lin, of Fast and Furious fame, not that you can really tell, in my opinion. Only the first episode is aired on NBC. I expect we will end up mostly focusing on that, even though we did get more screeners, which at least two of us did not care to watch. Let's do the Chen check-in very briefly. Crystal, should our listeners watch The Endgame?
I mean, if you have stuff you need to watch with your parents, yes, but yep. Otherwise, no.
Sarah?
Are you over the age of 82? Yes, otherwise, no.
Dave?
If you really want to travel back 20 years, this is definitely the show for you this week.
Yeah. I will repeat what I said on the Discord, and no offense to America's aunts and moms, but this is a show for America's aunts and moms.
All right. Important question straight off the bat now that we're done with the Chen check-in. Mm-hmm. The opening scene-ish thing is this. It's a U-Haul drop box that they put her in. This mastermind in the royal blue shimmery dress, and they take her from parts unknown but far away all the way to the secret army base under this old fort in Queens. You get a glimpse inside of this little box. There's no toilet. There's no nothing. How did she go so long without having to relieve herself? That is the real mystery of The Endgame.
Toilet strat is a universal concern.
Force of will.
Bad Ronald all over again.
Yeah. I said to Dave, it looked like when I was in high school, I went to a school of the performing arts, not that one in Canada that was crappy. But at a certain point, we got like these little pods that were like rehearsal pods, basically, where they were like soundproofed. So you could put several of them in a classroom and a bunch of you could be playing different pieces and not hear each other. And that's exactly what this looked like. Like, I'm not convinced that's not what it was.
Did you have toilets in those? You probably had toilets in those, so you can keep on practicing forever. It's
like, you think I was sitting on a toilet fluting? I was not.
I just figured you love the flute so much. It's like those people that wear diapers to slot machines. You just keep on wanting to flute.
No.
So that concludes our endgame discussion. Thanks for coming out.
So network shows keep trying to hook viewers into serialized procedurals like this in order to compete with fancier cable crime shows like Mare of Easttown or Killing Eve. Crystal, why don't network versions of these kinds of shows work in our day?
Honestly, that's a great question. I think for this one, I just think they're trying to do too many things at mm-hmm. once, right? Like, we have the story about Elena, is that her friend, Fedorova, yeah. mm-hmm. and her whole, like, backstory. But then you have the story with her and her husband. But then you have Val and her husband. Mm-hmm. And then there's also possibly stuff with, like, the government officials and their whole deal. And it's just, like, there's too much going on. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I felt like when I was watching the show was just, like, everyone's just saying a lot of words. Like, too many... too much dialogue, and yet you still feel like people are cutouts of characters. Like, they're not, like, real humans. It just, mm-hmm. it felt very, like, talky in a way that I think is bad.
Yeah.
Also, I think this is a story we've seen a bunch of times already. Like, mm-hmm. it's basically the Clarice and Hannibal Lecter. It's also, Sarah, you might appreciate this, but on Law & Order Criminal Intent, there was the whole deal with Goren and the Olivia Dabo character.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And this is, like, with a little, like, an inch of blind spot on the top.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I'm the, like, Blacklist.
We've seen mm-hmm. this, like, five, on this network alone, we've seen it, like, five times.
Yeah. So yes, exactly.
It was just very, like, okay, I mean, I guess it's different because they're two women now, and one mm-hmm. of them is Black, and that's new. I don't know. It just felt very, like, yeah.
Now introducing.
Yeah. Did you know Black people? Yeah.
For me, this felt like a throwback in a way. Not that it seemed like every other show that was trying to be Lost back in the day, but it mm-hmm. has this very network copycat sort of feel to it.
Yeah.
That took me back to sort of like the early aughts where it was like, it's Alias, but it's like, it's Undercover, or yeah. it's like, there's all these shows. I mean, it doesn't have a good enough Alias vibe to have it work mm-hmm. in its favor, but it has a very sort of, like, me also kind of, I can do this mm-hmm. sort of vibe. And this sort of show's future on network TV is already done. Like, yeah. this yeah. is sort of like the death throes of this sort of show, because it just can't compete with mm-hmm. everything else that is out there that is not limited by network TV practices and the standards. Like, there's shows yeah. like this, like spy-y shows that you can just find on Netflix or HBO Max or wherever else, that will do a much better job, unless you're just looking for something that could be on the TV while you do some sort of household hobby,
yes.
which in which case anything will do you. You don't yeah. need to watch this relatively expensive production. Another just post on the road of network TV having this weird slow death as IPTV just is taking mm-hmm. over before, mm-hmm. you know, in yeah. front of our eyes.
Yeah.
And yeah. this is, like, so obvious. What's wrong?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the problem with this is that if you're going to do a show like this, you want to see crazy graphic violence, or maybe just I do. If you can't have that, what are we doing? Like, this show can't even swear. Like, it's such a who cares-er. And to bring in Justin Lin as well, to give it that, like, Fast and Furious flavor, it's like, you don't have a budget to pull off the kind of shit that they do in those movies. So, like, who cares?
Normal and level-headed.
Yeah.
and just, like, the mastermind that knows how to read all of humanity is such a tired thing. Do you guys remember in 30 Rock, there was the joke about Jack and Liz being able to telegraph each other's jokes that they are going to have in this conversation, and it involves Nag's head?
Yes.
Like,
it's a canon episode.
Like that, where it's like, she's got all these cards that they paste here and there and show to cameras. And it's like, I could predict everything that was going to happen mm-hmm. to the nth degree. Like, it really was like, I am in control of the butterfly effect, the TV show,
yeah.
where she's like, you know, they got the thing that says, you were right all along, when she, like, gets yeah. to Bank X, like, 2 seconds too late.
Right.
And the security door closes. And it really was like Jack Donaghy's, you know, flipping the card, says, you will make a joke about Nag's head. It's like, come
and
on.
She's writing on the wrong side of these big post-its. Like, I mean, this is what I always think of is the prop work that I'm like, but how does it, because there's a, so shouldn't you, fuck it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is just too complicated. Like, mm-hmm. Blindspot had a similar problem. This is like Blindspot for me, in that it's like, it's excessively complicated. too ambitious for network.
Blind spot, the tattooed lady in the bag?
Yeah, tattooed lady in the bag. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't know what its strengths are in terms of the characters. Like, there's always some sort of, like, tertiary character going through the background of a scene that you're like, no, wait! Okay, bye. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you have to cover a show like this for work, this is like bunt nip to have to cover it for work. Like, I'm never going to watch it again because I don't need to.
Yeah.
But it's so modular, so predictable, and so flat soda that it's like, this is very easy to write
flat
about.
Soda.
So on that level, I sort of appreciate that it's like, I could synthesize this in like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And, but when like looking at Marina Baccarin's beautiful hair is the best thing about the show. Like, that's great. Not nothing. I'm not going to lie. But like, why is this? And a lot of money was spent, but it was like one third of the amount that needed to be spent. And it's on the wrong network.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the last network procedural that like worked and was interesting and that people still talk about is Hannibal. Mm-hmm. And that is because it did the thing. It's like the other two joke where Carrie is trying to figure out what he should write for himself. And it just cuts to his notebook and he just was written gay ? Like, this is that's the missing piece of this, where it's like, okay, like killing Eve is compelling because we, you know, for a lot of reasons. But one of them is that we wonder if Eve and Villanelle are going to fuck. And, you know, like if that's like not even a possibility here, and it seems like it's not, like, these are two attractive ladies, put them together. Oh, no, you can't because it's network. Then I don't care. Sorry.
Yeah, they're really hammering the whole like husband thing and how much they love their husbands. And it's like, okay, they're zeros also. So I mean, like, what is there to love so much? The one thing that I did find compelling, I watched both episodes because I don't have anything else to do. Sure. And so
I also did because I apparently need more boredom in my life.
The one thing that I found engaging was Jenna Stern, which I was like watching the first half hour and I was like, why do I know that woman's face? Where do I know her from? Where do I know
Judge
her
Elena
from?
Barth?
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it was she's Ricci from The Refuge Law and Order episode, the two-parter where they like with the Russian mob.
Yes.
Like, that's where I literally might have shook my fist when I finally realized it. Like, yes, I knew it. But yeah, that she was, in my opinion, more engaging than either of the main characters, especially in the second episode when you find out more about like her whole deal and what she's been up to. Because, you know, in the first episode, Elena's talking about how she's going to, you know, take out all of these high level government officials because she knows all this stuff about them. And, you know, it starts to come out one by one. And the Jenna Stern character, her deal comes out in the second episode. And I was like, oh, this is actually more interesting than whatever's happening with like Val and her husband and her weird sidekick. I don't know what his deal is, but yeah, it's so nothing of a show.
Well, and her whole character we already saw on actual Homeland, played by Miranda Otto, and it was a lot more interesting. Yep. So it's sort of like, like this is just half done and it shouldn't have been done at all, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of characters that we want to see more of, the drug lord living his best life in the triple wide prison cell.
Oh my God, yes!
Tell us more about that guy.
The good fellas setup that I was like, oh, an aristocrat. Like, oh, love it.
That's exactly what I thought of. I was like, I want to see his deal. Like, follow him to where, how he got here. And also, too, I found the sort of street level henchmen of Fedorova's that were like actually carrying out the crimes. I was like, they actually seem more interesting than she does. Like the one who's in the main bank and she has, there's some stuff that happened in the second episode where you're like, oh, that's actually kind of clever how they're pulling this off. And she's actually quite charismatic as compared to like, I don't know, Ryan Michelle Bethay, the woman who plays Val. She's fine. She's fine. But like, they're just giving her so nothing to do that I feel so bad for the dialogue she has to say. And even she's getting to like have a cool haircut and get to drive, do some cool donuts and like have a gun and stuff. That's cool. But she just is not doing anything like that's interesting that you want to see. Yeah. Whereas these other sort of tertiary characters are actually getting to be more engaging. And I'm just like, that's a real failure on the show's part.
Yeah.
I think.
Just as a sidebar, did you guys know The Blacklist is still on?
No, it's not.
It's coming.
I would have put money down that it ended 3 years ago.
I would have also. I was like, well, clearly that's why this show exists, because that one doesn't anymore.
Yeah.
But what kind of universe do we live in where the blacklist can run longer than My Name is Earl?
Yeah, it's coming back. It's in its ninth season.
Holy cow.
Friday, no, it's coming back for like to finish it off.
Did they establish how long the blacklist was in episode one? And they're like, oh, actually, this one was in four parts.
Yeah.
Number 26 was actually 26A to D.
Yeah. Anyway, Sarah and I would be remiss if we did not talk about good old Jesse Vasquez, Mark Damon Espinosa, being in the show, still working in the legal system. Jesse Vasquez from 90210.
I mean, he looks well.
He does.
Good for him. Mm-hmm. I just feel like this really is a show out of time.
Yeah.
That is either trying to be one of those CBS-y procedurals that also was a serial, but you didn't have to pay that close attention to it. Like,
The Mentalist.
Yes. Why can't I ever remember the name of that? Oh, that's right. Because it was super boring. I was like, you know, the Red John one with that cutie.
Yep.
Brain man.
Thinky guy. In California. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just is like assembled from spare parts of stuff from
Perfect
20 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's just this kind of boring platypus. Like, it's not offensive though.
Yeah.
It's just pointless.
I think I may combine two of your things together, we have a perfect description of these type of shows. Spare parts flat soda TV show.
Yes.
It is time to go around the dial talking about things that we've been watching on TV lately. First stop, Tara.
So I have two as usual. My highbrow pick is, or it's not a pick, as you will hear, but my highbrow show that I will be talking about is called Severance, no relation to the novel by Ling Ma. When I mentioned it to our friend Stephanie Green, she was like, oh, and I was like, no, and she was like, no. This is a new show on Apple TV Plus. It comes from Ben Stiller's production company, but much like Escape at Dannemora, which he also produced, it is not that funny. I mean, it's funnier than Escape at Dannemora, but that's not saying much. So our dystopic sci-fi scenario is that a company called Lumon has created a device that employees voluntarily get implanted in their brains to cause what is called severance, as in the title, which means when they get to work, the elevator ride down to their office like turns off their consciousness as their outside selves and they come to as their inside selves. The show calls these two states outies and innies, which I hate. It sounds disgusting to me, but whatever. So functionally, the outside selves are just turned off during work hours. But apart from that, their lives are normal. However, their inside selves do not exist except at work. So when they leave, the elevator doors open and they are back at work as though no time has passed. They don't sleep. They don't really eat. There are snacks. They each get two tokens a day for the vending machine. And they don't know anything at all about their outside selves. They don't know, you know, their life before. They don't know if they had a family. Nothing. So our protagonist is Mark S. He's played by Adam Scott. He has chosen to take a severed job because his wife died and he wants to turn off his grief some of the time. And outside Mark is not doing great, but inside Mark is thriving until his best work friend, Petey, played by Yul Vasquez, leaves suddenly and gets replaced by Helly, Britt Lauer. Helly very much does not want to be there, but when she demands to communicate to her outside self that she wants to quit, which they do like by taping videos, her outside self will not permit it. Mark wants to help Helly settle in, but her determination to escape her circumstances starts to disturb his equilibrium, as does his unfolding knowledge about what happened to Petey. So we're in a golden age of TV about people with implants in their heads. This is preceded by Made for Love and Peacemaker, so I guess it's officially a trend. This is the third. And Homecoming also dramatized the idea of technology being used to erase painful memories, which, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind came before that. Two episodes of Severance have dropped so far. I watched the whole season of 9 episodes. It seems like it's getting very, very positive reviews, but my feeling was that A, Homecoming, at least the first season, did this idea better. And B, if some of the world-building elements had been edited out, this would have made way more sense as a movie. And I thought that like 5 minutes into the pilot and never stopped thinking of it for 9 hours. It's fine. Ooh. The performances are good. A huge amount of thought went into the design of The Office, which looks incredible, but you can't skip the show. In my opinion, it is not my jam. Now I'm going to talk about Married at First Sight so that you could all completely disregard my opinions on television when what is good or bad. So I was going to wait until the end of the season to give you an update, but there have been developments. Three of the five couples are doing basically fine. A fourth clearly don't like each other, but are trying to figure it out. And then there's Alyssa and Chris. Alyssa is the one who bought 10 dresses for her wedding when I talked about this last time.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. We all knew for sure, definitely came on the show to find true love.
Wait, hang on. She bought 10 dresses in order to take them home, figure out which one she wanted to wear, or she bought 10 dresses with the intention of wearing 10 dresses
and
during her
wedding?
And did
costume changes?
Yeah.
No, she bought 10 because she couldn't decide. She only wore one. So, yeah, she was there to find true love with a stranger, definitely not to be a pretty, pretty princess on TV. So when she came down the aisle, she got a look at Chris. She was not into him physically. She went through with the wedding anyway. She then started to collect evidence from his friends and loved ones, like at the reception, about aspects of his personality that she could then turn against him. Like, one of Chris's friends said he has a tendency sometimes to overexplain stuff if he's excited about it. And she immediately ran to a camera to give an interview all, I can't be married to a mansplainer, even though he had not actually done this to her because they'd barely talked. And after the reception, we see all the other couples go up to their suites. And then we cut back to Chris sitting in the lobby at the reception venue being like, I don't know where she is. And then we found out she was telling producers she wanted to get her own room. And the next day she did the now traditional thing on the show of going for brunch alone with his loved ones. They like each meet each other's loved ones for brunch. Then went on this honeymoon, also getting a separate room there. And during group hangs with all the other couples, she would be on like the opposite side of the room or table or as far away from him as she could get. And Chris is not dumb. He obviously knew what was going on and kept trying to talk to her. Like, what is specifically the thing you have reservations about? And it, like, she just refused and said she didn't want to talk about it on a camera. He was clearly in a no-win position. Because continuing to try to wait for her to come around, he looks like a doormat. But if he's like, she has decided she can't stand me, so I am pulling the plug, it allows her to frame the narrative for the camera as, I was here with my whole heart and he rejected me, even though we can see what's actually happening, but that would be the story. So Alyssa had higher than usual level of awareness of how editing would be used to make the story about her, which is why she kept refusing to talk about it, their shit on camera, or I guess I should say she had a greater than usual amount of footage of her essentially breaking the fourth wall to talk about it, which makes it into the edit because the editors and her producers also hated her. There are so many scenes of her bitching at producers about how she got ripped off in the process because of Chris and what had gone wrong was not her fault. All being shot from angles that made it clear she was definitely not aware that she was being filmed. Like, the camera would be on the other end of a beach or like under a table while she went on and on, which is hilarious. So after the honeymoon, what happens is couples are provided a neutral furnished apartment that they live in until decision day. Chris made it clear he was still planning to move into that place, even though he knew she was not going to live in it with him, which she confirmed. But her suggestion was, okay, you live in it for 3 weeks, then you move out. I'll take it over for the last 3 weeks so she could still have the experience of being around the other wives for like impromptu hangs or whatever. She doesn't know. They also all hate her. And the producers at this point had to tell her on hidden camera, the point of the show isn't for you to be near your new friends. It's to live with your husband. And she just kept crying, being like, I shouldn't have to miss out on this experience just because it matched and work out. And they were like, no, you do have to miss out on it if you're not getting married to this guy. So by the time she got back to Boston, Alyssa had come up with some reasons she couldn't live with Chris. Get this. He had posted something about defunding the police on his Instagram, and she was like, I am pro first responder. Like, this is the angle you want to take if you're worried about your edit? Okay.
Okay.
She also presented herself in the casting as someone who works in dog rescue, but now she's allergic to all dogs other than her own dog, and that definitely included Chris's dog. She lays all this out in a meeting at the apartment with Pastor Cal, who's one of the matchmaking experts. Chris just lets her talk and talk and dig herself deeper. And when Pastor Cal turns to Chris, he's like, fine, this is my decision day. And he announces, this has clearly failed. He is done. Alyssa cries and cries because she knows it means she won't get to be on TV anymore. Probably. I hope that's not the case and that they come up with reasons to check in on her being a total monster. But even if this is all we ever get of her, She was great TV. The producers hit the shithead jackpot when they found her. And I have watched every season of the show, and truly, she is the worst. And that includes people who, like, got other women pregnant while they were engaged.
Oh, my God.
I just want to add as a PS, I have a contact inside the company that produces the show who asked me to check out season 2 of Love is Blind on Netflix, since they produce that as well. I could not say no to a direct appeal, so I will report on that next week. I watched 6 episodes yesterday. My brain is broken. I have 2 plugs this week. I'll hold the other one for later. But I interviewed Adam Scott about Severance and some of his other stuff, including the Party Down remake, which is currently filming. Woo! Not remake, the new season. That is at GQ, and we will link that in the show notes.
Crystal, what do you have for us?
So I was surfing, is that what people call it now, around Hulu the other day. And I came across the splash page for this show called Creamery. I hadn't heard of it. And then after I watched it, I realized when I went to look into it more, it's because it's from New Zealand. It's a really interesting show. So I would describe it as like a combination of Why the Last Man and The Leftovers and The Goop Lab. I don't know, whatever that show is. Oh, like
wow. At.
Okay.
I'm listening.
So
I'm scared. I mean, I'm listening.
Honestly, you should be after I watch these episodes. So it's about, so it takes place in like the near future, or what seems like the near future, about like 10 years after a deadly virus has like swept through the land and killed all the men. So that's his first selling point. No, not really. So
hey, vacation's a vacation. I don't know.
So we get introduced to this world, and it seems like everything is mostly normal, but then we realize that the sort of local government in this like New Zealand community has been replaced by an organization called Wellness, which sounds exactly like what you think it is. It's this very like millennial pink, sort of feminist utopia kind of seeming org with all of these very beautiful women at the top in what they call the committee. We get introduced to the world via the 3 main characters, Pip, Jamie, and Alex. They all have different feelings about sort of the new normal. Pip is probably the most bought into everything that Wellness is selling. You know, she works at one of the wellness centers, and she has like dreams of moving up in the organization, eventually, hopefully becoming part of the committee someday. Then there is Jamie, who is like her best friend from childhood. And Jamie is ambivalent about Wellness and the new normal, but that's only because she's like overwhelmed with her grief. She basically lost her son and her husband to the virus, and she's not really interested in anything that they have going on except for the repopulation program that they do. So every quarter they draw these names, and if the people are of like childbearing age, they get to be like inseminated, because apparently in this world the sperm banks are still functional. And then there is Alex, who is Jamie's sister-in-law, and she's not ambivalent about everything. She basically wants to burn Wellness down and the entire organization. And she's kind of always doing these little acts of civil disobedience. And we see at the beginning of the first episode that she does one of these things, and she gets punished via this method that they call blissing. And it's exactly. they inject you with like some kind of chemical, and it makes you like docile and are basically like a small child. Pip and Jamie still have to go and, you know, do their work. Jamie works at she has a dairy farm that she owns, and that's where they all live. Pip goes to work. They come back at the end of the day and Alex is gone, and they're freaking out, and they get in the car to try to go find her, and they hit someone, and they go and roll the body over, and they discover that it's a man. I know, shocker.
Oh my gosh, I want to go watch this now. They should pay you. You're doing great. What else?
I'm glad. And then, so basically that is the sort of inciting incident for all of the, you know, the rest of the action in the show. And I'm making it sound like it's like a drama or there's some intense, like serialized thing. It's more of a dark comedy and a satire than anything. There's a whole episode where there's like a chase happening. They're being like pursued by people, and they get caught in this thing called Sink Fest, where it's exactly what you think it is, where, you know, they're all celebrating the moon and everyone's cycle. And It's really, it's very, very silly. Six episodes, and they're, I think, only like 20 minutes each. So you can like speed through this whole show in like an evening, which is what I did.
Nice.
And I really liked it. I don't think it's perfect because sometimes the show, I think, gets the tone gets away from them. Mm. I'm really excited to see the second season if it ever happens. But yeah, it's Creamery on Hulu, and it's Creamery with an IE, not with a Y. So not
of course
like,
it is.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Not like rich creamery butter, but the with an IE. Yeah. So
the country that did the best job with the epidemic is setting itself up for making shows about epidemics. Got it.
They do the best job of doing that.
Shocking. Shocking how that works.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely.
And for your plugs?
I also have a podcast. It's called 2 Cents Plus Tax. It's just a pop culture podcast. We kind of try to have topics, but we always get off track. And it's very silly. If you want to hear people who are old millennials talk about Madonna and that time that Courtney Love interrupted her post-VMA interview, because we have very strong feelings about that. You can check out our podcast, 2 Cents Plus Tax, on Instagram, on Twitter. We also have a website. We also have a Patreon if you're interested in contributing, not because we like expect to make any money off of this, but because we try to keep our show as accessible as possible. So we use the money to do to pay for transcripts of each episode. So yeah, 2 Cents Plus Tax podcast.com, I believe, and 2 Cents Plus Tax in all the social media places.
I have a couple of things that are true crimey. The first one is Inventing Anna. I will keep it brief because that's been out for a minute now. If you've been on the fence somehow still about it because you don't usually like Shonda Rhimes' product, this is quintessential Shonda Rhimes' product in that it's very watchable for a while and you like all the on-camera talent and seeing them work for a while. And then eventually it all kind of falls apart if you take it seriously at all or like choose to care about it, which you shouldn't. Inventing Anna is really fun to look at. The Scriberia bullpen at quote Manhattan Magazine, whatever, is a delight. Please put Anna Deavere Smith in everything, always. Julia Garner is a joy. But there's just really a lot wrong with the series. Like, it's much too long. It makes its point of view reporter character a bad reporter. It doesn't understand that part of what we like about a con artist slash scam story is that we'll never get at the why, and that's irrelevant in the second place. We are there for the how, so stick to that. And if you read any of the long form pieces from when the Anna Sorokin story first broke, you don't, quote, need this series. All I can say is this: if you think you'll like it, you're right. And if you think you won't like it, you're right. So trust your gut. But if you do like con slash scam stories, let me recommend a series you probably have not heard of on a streaming service you probably haven't heard of. And I really hope they do a rebrand because the name Curiosity Stream sounds like a euphemism for some kind of kink. No judgments. It's just not a good name. It's like, it's all documentaries about peeing. It isn't. It's from the former head of Discovery Networks. It is all documentaries. There may be some about peeing. I haven't investigated the entire library.
There's got to be something about peeing. You just can't do it without having some pee.
It's a part of life.
You want to get people in the seats?
Oh. So Inside the Mind of a Con Artist is a 6-part original series that basically invites notorious cons to a, quote, institute that appears to be on a glacier somewhere. And it tasks a forensic psychologist, a behavioral psychologist, and a neurobiologist with cracking these nuts, basically. I've only watched one. The Frederick Bourdain episode, that is the guy from Bart Layton's The Imposter / That New Yorker article. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows this guy.
Yep.
I'm not totally sure what this show is trying to do, but it is so fascinated with its subjects and so processy and like invested in whether it can use science to unpack like the confidence man, that its enthusiasm almost sells you even when a given episode is sort of like, so really they're putting the electrode cap on this guy? Like, And then he, you know, he puts the bray over it. And then he pees. Just kidding. He doesn't. I reviewed both of these properties at my newsletter that I write with Eve Beatty. It's called bestevidence.fyi. You can find all that stuff there. And I believe Tara is going to step back in with a plug right now.
I am. I interviewed Aryan Moyed about Inventing Anna and the new Spider-Man movie and Succession and Love Life Season 2, because he's done all of those and more. And that is also at GQ. He plays Todd in Inventing Anna, the Anna's lawyer.
Yeah, he's so good in Inventing Anna. Actually, he's one of the highlights, I would say.
I'd like to plug my documentary about peeing criminals. It's called You're in Trouble.
Oh, God. Get out.
Whoops, that's the wrong one.
Is it?
Yes, I mean, I guess we'll have to go through it. All right, we've missed a couple 911 Lone Stars. So, okay, let's do it.
The stars at night are big and bright.
All right, three episodes to talk about, two that have aired, and we got to talk about next week's. The one that we missed because we had a pre-tape was Rob Lowe is really into aliens.
Yeah.
It's a combination of the first half of the Mr. Burns is an alien episode of The Simpsons. I bring you love. Mm-hmm. That's the setup where two people have been irradiated and we see some glowing figures in the forest. But then we learn Captain Strand is like, ancient aliens nut, totally out of character.
Completely.
Just added that. Like, I like the idea that people think there's aliens running around Austin, and the reason why they glow, that part of it was kind of fun. But they, and I can't believe I'm saying this about a show so stupid, but it ruined it by just having it out of, like, give that to somebody else. You know, like, yeah, find another character that you could believe was an ancient aliens nut bar. Not
Mateo.
Me, a considered gentleman who loves ancient aliens for the shit show that it is. No, this, mm-hmm, he was like kind of a TB, you know, like it was, mm-hmm, like really like you are into it too much. Kind of took me out of it. I had a lot of people email me and message me. He's like, well, I guess we're going to hear that music about that alien. So I'm like, no, you got to have it both stupid and believable within the stupid universe that they have created. And unfortunately, we didn't have both elements.
Wait, so the character, it's Rob Lowe's character who's, yeah, into the aliens.
Yeah.
So I bet, here's my theory, having never watched a frame of this shtees, is that they tried to give it to a different character. And Rob Lowe, who had a whole show about like finding Bigfoot with his kids and shit, which, yeah, we, mm-hmm, talked about on this show,
yeah,
was,
yeah,
like, oh, no, 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 no. And then, like, well, actually, the script, and they're like, fine, just make, yeah, it him.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that. But then again, like, it's somebody's job up top to say, no, yeah, you can be part of the storyline as, yes, the level-headed, doubting Thomas. That, right, is your character, yes, role in all this. You're not the crazy guy who suddenly is a member of MUFON and, like, all this, mm-hmm, shit. Like, no, that does not work for that. All
right. No, this is Mateo shit. Mateo is a dummy. He should be into this.
And then this week we had blue-eyed ghoul Neil McDonough come, mm-hmm, in as, oh, the Austin police officer, motorcycle officer, who hates firefighters because reasons.
Yeah.
The opening case, or the opening, you know, emergency is a guy got ejected from his car, landed on like an overpass sign, you know, like 20 feet up somehow. So the fire truck is on the highway blocking traffic because, well, you know, they got to get this lump of body off the sign. This cop comes in, gives the fire department a ticket for blocking traffic. Like, that would never happen.
So dumb.
That's fine. I don't mind things that would never happen in real life on 911. But then it goes back and forth. So then Captain Strand, Rob Lowe's, he rips up the ticket. And then that cop's mad. They do things back and forth. And then the stakes become Rob Lowe is going to get the whole firehouse to form a first responders baseball team to really stick it to the Neil McDonough guy who really loves his baseball team, is undefeated. Mm-hmm. And that's the big stakes.
Yeah.
And then, as Tara says, because there really can be no real conflict in this show, and that it was sort of like, it's a show about people that die in horrific ways, yet it's also made for four-year-olds. Everything turns out fine in the end.
Yeah.
There is a fire at a grow house.
Yeah.
At a baseball bat factory.
And the whole, the police department that gets there gets high, and Neil McDonough's character passes out or gets super high in the hydroponics, and he is saved, and therefore now they're all friends. He's chowing down with them at the firehouse. It was ridiculous. There was like 9-1-1 like crazy stuff happening. It was just like this weird morality tale that centered around baseball. It was
the farmer
just
and the cowhand should be friends, but with cops and firefighters.
Yeah.
Ancient alien ethicists say, no thanks.
Two kind of dud episodes in a row. But then we got a preview of next week's. Mm-hmm. And this is a spoiler insofar that we haven't seen it yet. So I'm going to tell you, who cares? Spoilers for 911.
It's in the promo.
It's in the promo is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The what's her name? What's the actress's name from
Lisa
House?
Lisa Edelstein.
Her character, who is Rob Lowe's ex-wife and, you know, the mother of the son that's also on the show, she dies, and so they have to go back to New York for the funeral, and then all the crazy shit happens on the plane.
On
the plane's going down. Yes, it's a midair 911. This is the kind of shit we come to 911 for.
Yes.
So I'm hopeful I will be back next week with a successful That's What I Like About Texas report for you from 911, but unfortunately not this week.
But if it happens on the plane, is it still What You Like About Texas, or is it What You Like About, like, North Alabama?
We're going to get the flight information. We're going to figure out how long into the flight path this happens, and then we'll dub it in. If it's That's What I Like About Tennessee? Yeah.
Arkansas?
No, it's not. It's Void in Tennessee. Okay, let's also talk quickly about Reacher. It's been out for a little while, but because we had last week off, we were able to go back and revisit and watch the whole thing. It is a perfectly cromulent, violent, goon, punches people show.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The ridiculous part of it for me, and it didn't really take away from it, but it's really like, I don't buy that, is Reacher is like this special detective for the army at one point in his life. And he just like, he's got these Sherlockian moments where he just like tells you everything about your life, just like Sherlock Holmes does, except they really don't make any sense in this show. Mm-hmm. Like, they're really like, well, I see you've got a shoelace on your shoe, and therefore I'm going to do A, B, and C. But like, there's no real connective tissue with what he's saying and what he does. It could be 10,000 other things that could have happened here. They really don't funnel it down into the improbable versus the probable and the impossible in a way that, so whenever he does that, it was sort of delightfully ridiculous and wrong that it kind of added to the show. It was like, okay, the guy comes around, he beats people up, he knows about guns and armaments and bullets and that kind of stuff, but he also knows about carrying weight of the African swallow kind of stuff. Like, it's ridiculous. I loved it.
Yeah. Also, one of the very first ones he does turns out to be wrong by the end of the series. So, you know, it kind of undercuts all the other times where he's very right. But yes, silly show.
It's funny now to know, like, the only thing anybody ever says about the Tom Cruise version of this is, why is Tom Cruise Jack Reacher?
Yeah.
And then you watch this and you see, like, a character more towards what the book is.
Yes.
And he's just like, well, giant brick wall. Jack Reacher for Tom Cruise is just like, I got this script. It's a Mission Impossible script, but we can't shoot Mission Impossible this year. What can I do it? You know, it's like when all the Die Hard films after Die Hard 2 were never Die Hard films to start with. It's sort of like that. The only thing they could bring from this movie, from the movie that would have made this great, would be Werner Herzog.
Yeah.
Which is like the most puzzling and best part of that.
Yeah.
Always true.
Yes.
As always, a couple episodes too long for these kind of things.
Yeah.
And though I did enjoy him, like clockwork, every 45 minutes during the show, wondering about how much cow feed this company is going through. It's like, don't remember this point. Yeah. We're going to come back to it. Cow feed.
Yeah.
Every episode, cow feed. I really enjoyed it.
When the cop is like, shut the fuck up about the cow feed already, like every time in 7 out of 8 episodes until, spoiler, it ends up being a thing.
But it was well made. It was enjoyable. I liked it. I would definitely watch. More of this, less of Jack Ryan would be my bargain with Amazon.
Yep.
Coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great is Law and Reorder. Now that the Law and Order reintroduction, it's not a reboot, it's not a re-spin, it's a reintroduction, is here. We're going to recast that franchise with all our favorite characters, but using other actors that are working today. This comes from a suggestion from our friend Dan Casino on the Discord, available to all our Patreon supporters. That and these episodes, patreon.com/extrahotgreat. And then right here on EHG Prime next week, it is That Law and Order. And we welcome back Mr. Blankenship of the Blankenship Chair to talk about Law and Order 2022.
Today's extra credit topic comes to us from Laura. It is called Say Perhaps to Drugs. Laura writes, one of my favorite plot devices on TV is when a character or group of characters take some form of mind-altering substance, for example, shrooms on Love, nostalgia on Watchmen, that chili pepper Homerade at the chili cook-off. Pick one or more characters from a show, tell me what mind-altering substance, real or TV real, they take, and what antics ensue. And I'll go first because it's piggybacking off a show we just talked about. I want to see Reacher and Finley from Reacher smoke weed. Finley is the head detective of this tiny town that they're in, Margrave, Georgia. He's played by the guy who played Clive on iZombie, who's also a detective there. So how it changes them would make Reacher more giggly, less of a stoic tough guy than when he has all his wits about him, but he still beats down all comers because even if he is not fully in his head, he is still a giant. As Dave said, he's very, very large. Also, he is even more hungry than his usual baseline. They definitely establish in the show he likes to eat. They go to a chicken place. He gets chicken in literally every single side, which all looked amazing, by the way. Finley is a little tweed-wearing, uptight guy. So if he were high on weed, he would allow himself to strip off all the extraneous clothing layers that are not serving him in Georgia. That's also a plot point that he wears a three-piece suit. He rocks out a little harder to his preferred dad bands, which we learn about, and he gets less persnickety about his diet. He is very judgy of the things that other people eat, prefers to get himself a spinach salad at the chicken place, which, what? Gross. Mm-mm. Get chicken. Don't be weird. So that is my answer for that, even though, unlike Laura, this is one of my least favorite TV tropes, but I still tried to rise to the occasion. Crystal.
The two characters that I came up with were Bob Belcher and Teddy from Bob's Burgers.
Yes.
Mostly because they have a very tense relationship, even though they, I would say, probably are each other's best friends. Mm-hmm. Bob hates a lot of things about Teddy.
Yes.
And tolerates a lot of things that I would tolerate in a friend. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be really funny if, say, they accidentally, possibly purposely, were on shrooms for some reason. I mean, we know Bob likes to go and forage. There's a whole episode about that.
Yep.
So maybe he finds something that he, for some reason, takes Teddy along, and they find some shrooms and end up having a nice afternoon. Maybe they tell the family that they're gonna, I don't know, fix something in the walk-in, and they end up having like a heart-to-heart about why they're so weird to each other. Just get it all out there. And yeah, I think it would be really funny. Bob is very sort of uptight about his feelings, except for when he's expressing displeasure at stuff. Pretty free with saying how much he hates everything, but I think he has a harder time saying why he likes other things and other people. So I think that would be sort of helpful. And Teddy, I think, is just, he's just a weird guy. And so it would be nice to hear him sort of speak straightforward about like why he likes Bob so much and why he likes the family so much, because he's like always around too. But yeah, I think Bob and Teddy on shrooms would make for good TV.
I love it. Sarah.
The world is waiting for you. Why stop there? All the worlds could be waiting for you through the doors of perception. Just let the sugar cube dissolve on your tongue, turn your head creepily towards the camera, and kick off the premiere episode of The Amazing Trip. Bill Kogan is your host / trip guide. Mm-hmm. I really think he'd be quite good at that. He seems like a guy who not only still calls it Sinsemilla, but has some on hand most of the time.
Yeah.
And like, he knows what to do if an acid sesh starts going sideways. He just seems like he has that little like necklace, that little sort of horn puka necklace, that he just seems like he's a guy who'd be like, okay, here's what we're gonna do when everyone's freaking out. So that's my idea. I am also already thinking of ways to not only make this happen, but to assemble like Amazing Race all-star teams, like Robin Amber, Mike White and his dad, and yep, Kevin and Drew on this theoretical trip to Joshua Tree. Mm-hmm. So that's my idea.
Yep.
Dave.
The Thundercats all get big sachets of catnip. Lion-O plays with imaginary mouse in the corner. Panthro can't stop giggling to himself about his paws. Chitara makes out with Snarf, and whatever the kid Thundercat's name is, just watches everything because drugs are not for kids, just for grown-ups. My My, it is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is Michael. Take it away, Michael.
I'm a relatively new listener to Extra Hot Great, and I particularly enjoy the idea of the canon. The list is certainly a who's who of great TV. However, in looking over the list, I found a notable omission, an absence that seems, if you will, imprazible. I speak, of course, of the six-season comedy Cougar Town. To rectify this situation, I would like to submit for canon consideration Season 3, Episode 5, A One-Story Town. Cougar Town was set in the town of Gulf Haven, Florida, and centers on a group of friends who mostly all live on the same suburban cul-de-sac. In this episode, Bobby, played by Brian Van Holt, is smitten with Angie, played by Sarah Chalk. So Bobby's ex-wife, Jules, played by Courtney Cox, convinces the gang to help Bobby and Angie have the best first date ever, though Ellie, Krista Miller, is a holdout.
Look, when Bobby really likes a girl, he gets so nervous and awkward that even his gibberish gets worse.
That's impossible, or as Bobby would say, that's impossible.
Okay, we just gotta get him to that first kiss, because after the first kiss, all of his nerves melt away and he gets back to his charming self. Okay, who's in?
Me! I am so out.
You know, when Bobby and I first met, he couldn't talk to me, but I thought he was so hot that I grabbed his rat tail and I said, spit out your dip. Coming in.
Oh.
You know what happened after that kiss? He put a baby in you? No, that was a few days later. I love you, sweetie. He smiled and he said, well, that was fun. Want to do it again?
That is so sexy.
Jules's plan, called Operation Kiss the Girl, involves champagne, a romantic movie, drinks with friends, and finally sunset on the beach. As Jules describes her plan, we see vignettes of the plan proceeding flawlessly, culminating with a kiss on the beach and Bobby's signature sexy line. But when the plan begins, everything goes wrong. Bobby remembers to put on a sport coat, but forgets to change out of his swimsuit. Their conversation on the way to the movie is a total downer and only ends when they run into a swarm of bees. And the drinks with friends are derailed when Jules's boyfriend Grayson, played by Josh Hopkins, let's his neuroses get the better of him.
Hi, you must be Angie. I'm Bobby's ex-wife, Jules, and this is Bobby's friend, Grayson, who's also my fiancé.
Sometimes it sounds weird when you say facts out loud.
That's rather cool.
You know you can't eat soup out of a bread bowl. You always think the soup is too hot, then you eat the bowl first, and it's a disaster.
You're not really telling a grown man how to eat, are you?
No, because that would be weird. I do have a really funny story.
Hey, Angie. Do I look like a good kisser?
Dude, not now. Bobby, no.
Just a little bit off the rim. It's not going to compromise the infrastructure.
Because I've kissed a lot of people.
Good job.
But I don't think about it, see, because I don't live in the past.
Oh, I'm sorry. I remember how people kiss and make love.
Well, why would you throw make love in there?
That was a little weird. Really?
Sorry.
Why don't we all just have a giant makeout party right here, huh? Right now. Bam, 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 bam.
Please don't make me kiss you.
That awkward conversation only ends when Bobby eats too much of his bread bowl, causing soup to spill over Angie's lap. Despite all of this, the gang, even Ellie, convince Bobby and Angie to meet up once more at the plaza for a romantic reunion scored to, of course, Kiss the Girl from The Little Mermaid. No clip here because I don't want the Disney lawyers to shut down your podcast. This episode highlights so many of Cougar Town's strengths. First and foremost, the show captured the feeling of hanging out with a group of friends who you've known for a long time, who know all your faults and all your virtues, and who will go to great lengths to help you out. These are all flawed people whose flaws actually derail Jules' plan. And Jules wouldn't have come up with a plan to get Bobby a date if she wasn't such a control freak in the first place. Bobby, too, is flawed. He's a philandering ex-husband, after all, but he still tries to be better, and the gang, including Jules, wants to help him. Cougar Town was also adept at capturing the breezy, stupid banter and in-jokes that develop among a group of longtime friends, as is on display in this digression between Jules and Ellie.
You know, wearing this headset makes me look like Sigourney Weaver in that movie with the alien.
It was called Alien.
No, I'm thinking of a different movie.
You're not, but you know what's lame about action movies? Everyone's always running everywhere.
Yeah, but I do love the way Tom Cruise runs in movies. You know, he goes faster because he karate chops the air.
It feels faster. Let's take a curve.
That last clip also features some delightful physical comedy from Courtney Cox and Krista Miller, though MVP in that regard has to go to Sarah Chalk and her bow-legged walk after being burned by Bobby's soup. So why does this episode stand out from all other Cougar Town episodes? Well, it's really its structure and plotting. The summary I gave doesn't do justice to all the details that are set up and then pay off later in the episode. Lori, played by Izzy Phillips, her ankle monitor and her love of hot wings, the Crab Festival and the Quebecers who flock to Gulf Haven for it, and the Disney a cappella group that has to stay with Jules because the hotels are full of Quebecers. Even the Tom Cruise karate chop run makes a callback appearance later in the episode. In summary, Cougar Town was a series that never really got the respect that it deserved, and One Story Town is one of the best, if not the best, episode it ever did. I hope that you will induct this episode into the canon.
Thank you, Michael. Crystal, you chose this. Why don't you start us off?
Speaking of shows that like you watch with your parents, I watched this show for the first time when I was on winter break from grad school. I was home visiting my mom and, you know, you just watch whatever is on. And it was like the ABC comedy lineup was like The Middle and then this show and then I think Modern Family or something. And I remember being like literally surprised. I don't know why there are comedies, but I was actually surprised that they were funny to me. So I was like, oh, is Cougar Town like actually really a good show? It was very silly, much sillier than I remember it being. One thing that the submitter didn't mention is the whole subplot about the a cappella group.
Yeah.
My absolute favorite line in this show was the line at the very beginning where Jules is talking about all the things that make her want to die and a cappella being one of them. And I was like, absolutely 100% agree. He's the lawyer from Ted. There we go. From Scrubs. And he has an a cappella group and they come to stay in Jules' guest room. And it's like a running bit where she keeps trying to tell them like stay out of her bathroom and stop smelling her toothbrush and other weird things that they do. Really liked it. I think the one drawback I will say for this episode is I like the character of Ellie a lot and I like episodes that are more focused on her. I think I have a sort of fondness for characters who are like, yeah, I don't really care that much about people. There's a tag at the end of the episode, which I hope I'm not stepping on anyone else's points, but there's a tag at the end of the episode about all of the Scrubs actors that are also in this show, which I found really fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. I'm still trying to decide whether or not I will vote for it, but I do think it's a very, very funny episode, but I'm not sure that it like can stand on its own for someone who maybe doesn't have the knowledge of it. So yeah, I'd love to hear what you all think about it.
Well, I'll go last because I did also watch all of the shows. So Sarah, why don't you go next?
I have been meaning to watch this show for years now and had not really gotten around to it until preparing this episode. I also wrote down a lot of lines, many of them mentioned by the submitter. I laughed a lot. I did want to keep watching it. But I also kept thinking about how happy endings used to do pretty much exactly this, better and faster. Mm-hmm. Which is not to say that this wasn't enjoyable, that it isn't plenty good on its own. Sarah Chalk's physical comedy is like championship in this. Everyone's is. I was on a Scrubs watcher, so like I got that that was a joke, but I also was sort of like, but yeah, there were a lot of there are like actors and performers in this episode who I usually don't feature. Like Josh Hopkins usually is just like, oh God. But I mean, he's good. He's good here. And it's a sort of one of those thankless, unrealistic subplots. The silliness is really good. Krista Miller just being like, I don't believe in you. This is horseshit. Like just repeatedly as a runner, but then literally like both of them, Tom Cruise running. I mean, it's a very simple joke, well done, and like the callback is timed well. This is a professional outfit, and like Crystal said, it's season three. Like the thing knows how it's supposed to run and has a good ear for itself. I just have no context for it, so yeah. I'm not sure if I'm going to vote yes either. The presentation was excellent, Michael. Thank you very much, but I just am not sure I have context for it. So I'm interested to hear what Tara has to say about it in that regard. But first, Let us hear from Dave.
Nobody's interested in what Dave thinks. The opening little Bart Simpson on the blackboard thing they do with the credits, where they always have some different subtitle for Cougar Town, is it's not like Scrubs with more wine, but it is like Scrubs with more wine, but it's not as funny as Scrubs. And
also, they spelled Gainesville wrong. Don't do that.
Coming to a realization with this show, which is I don't like Cougar Town. Tara always tries to get me to engage in Cougar Town, and there's things about it that are kind of funny. I really love Bobby as a character. Describing him as a golden retriever of a human is a perfect way. He's just like, the best part of this episode is his line where he actually says to a shirt, good joke shirt, because it's like, I got crabs in Gulf Haven restaurant shirt. I don't like Courtney Cox in Cougar Town. I feel like everything she does, she's got an affectation here that just like telegraphs or like presents the joke in a way that I find very performative and off-putting. And it's just sort of like, huh? Here comes the joke, or that was the joke. And it's sort of like the character, and it's sort of like, you know, wine mom sort of vibe to that. But I don't like it, and I don't find it funny. Like, Scrubs doesn't really hold up. If you watch Scrubs now,
it's true.
It doesn't really hold up, even though, like, back in the day, it was sort of, like, new-ish. It's pacing and it's weird sort of flights of fancy and stuff like that. But I found that show had a quicker pace and a sharper wit than Cougar Town. And Cougar Town came after Scrubs, so I just kind of felt like, I'm done with Cougar Town. And I'm done with Cougar Town. Yeah. There, I said it.
I mean, I did try to make you watch it, but I realized, like, we had gotten pretty far through season one, where I was like, okay, this isn't going to take. And part of it is that and the show definitely did evolve. Like, originally, the reason it's called Cougar Town is because the Courtney Cox character, Jules, is like, she's a divorced mom, and now she's going to try dating younger guys. And that was a conceit that they dropped, like, three episodes in, but then it was still called Cougar Town and they just had to kind of live with it, which is why they had the title card thing that Dave referred to. But even so, even after they did drop that part of it, like, so much of the jokes in the first season revolve around Courtney Cox's character being like talking negatively about her face and body, and it's just like, this is not what we're doing anymore, and this is barely what we were doing in, like, the late 2000s. And they, you know, they did get away from it and turned it more into, like, this is just people on a cul-de-sac doing goofy shit. Like, barely a workplace anything. Like, it's just, it really is just a collection of weirdos being weird. And that part of it is fine. But, Sarah, like, you're mentioning happy endings as a show that did the same kind of thing better is perfectly encapsulates my feeling about revisiting this, like, mid-run episode, because there's funny stuff, but it's just like it's very much like take one thing off. Like, it's just that stuff happens where you're like, I get why you wanted this joke to be there, but it feels so overstuffed and unconsidered. Like,
it's maybe just a string of bits that they're just like, we're putting everything in and we don't actually care how it hangs together, because that's not why people watch the show. I don't know if it's always like that, but
no, it pretty much
they
is.
Almost and get away with it though.
Yeah, it's just enough where it's like, I see where you're going, and it's just like, just refine it. And there's ways where if you're a network show, you can't, because you have to hit a certain runtime.
Yeah.
And I get that. Like, there's, you know, like, there's early Diablo Cody too, where it's just like, I see where you're going and there's good bits, but it's like, just winnow it down. And like, for someone, because it's the same producer as Bill, as Scrubs, Bill Lawrence, and it's like, you had 9 seasons to get this right. And you know, by the end, it was really off the rails, Scrubs, as Dave said. But this is like, maybe it's just the kind of thing where, like, if it was just the one show a week that you watched that was like this, it's like, it's enjoyable, and you don't really think about it very much. But in a binging situation, it's like, oh God, this is just, it's exhausting. Like, it's really exhausting. Yeah. And this is a show I really liked at the time. It's wild to me that the submitter didn't mention the Scrubs tie-in, because, like, it opens and closes the episode, the whole thing with Ted. And the rest of it is just, like, there's so much stuff in the middle where it's like, okay, like, you know, the bread bowl bit, it's like, get there faster. Like, if you're already saying what the problem is, that's the setup, like, hurry up. hurry up and have the bread bowl.
Yeah, that needs to be happening after you say the,
No, it needs to be happening while she's saying it. Like, he needs to have already gotten there. And the one last thing I'll mention is very shallow, but it has to be said. What did they do to Sarah Chalk's hair? It looked so bad. They don't actually shoot the show in Florida. Why is it so sticky? It was so frizzy and big. I don't understand.
I almost was Googling to see, like, was she working on, like, a movie or something where they were like, we can't do anything to her hair because it needs to be like this for a reason.
Well, you can comb it. Like, there's no reason why it was that frizzy. And it looked painful and it hurt my feelings and it made me feel bad for her. That's it.
All right, let's put this to the official vote. Crystal, what say you? Canon worthy or not?
I'm going to say yay because I picked it and it was nice to sort of go back and experience this, whatever, 17, 15 years later. So yay. I feel like other people are not going to vote yay, so I have to if I chose it.
Ah, but still being the hero, Chris, reading the tea leaves.
Exactly. Now you get me, Dave.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I thought that maybe Tara would tip me over to the yes side, but she actually tipped me over to the no side. And what I want to actually keep watching now is happy endings, unfortunately. This was quite a pleasurable 23 minutes. Excellent presentation, Michael, but it is a no from me, dog.
Yeah, me as well. Sorry, Michael, but thank you for submitting.
And I'll say no as well. So that means, unfortunately, Cougar Town, Season 3, Episode 5, A One-Story Town, we are hereby not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Kid.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for the winner and the loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
I do. Apparently, there is going to be a BBC and FX co-production series adaptation of Great Expectations, and it has cast as its Miss Havisham, Olivia Colman. Nothing wrong with that. But also worth mentioning, just as a sidebar, also in it is going to be Toast of London's Matt Berry playing Joe's uncle, Mr. Pumblechuck, which sounds like a name of an actor that Stephen Toast's agent, Jane, would represent.
Really does. And loser of the week, Sarah.
Oh, gosh. Once more into the breach, Erica Jane. The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills' Erica Jane has been sued in a $2.1 million embezzlement action. As I said in Tars and My Slack, no rest for the stupid.
Alas. Speaking of a good and sued in the $2.1 million embezzlement act, do you know what time it is?
Game time?
Yes.
I've used the wrong segue.
I know, I thought so too.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Game Time. We have two players this week that could clinch the season. It is indeed the 10th. Game of the season. Scores are Tara with 4, Value Guess with 4, Sarah with 1. Today, we are playing Knock Knock from David Ellis Dickerson, who earns himself an extra credit topic of his choosing. And also thanks to @EHGAssist for the help with a few extra questions this week. In Knock Knock, a person representing a TV show will come calling on you. Figure out what TV show they represent. For example, Knock Knock.
Who's there?
Buzz
who?
Buzz Inga. So they represent...
Big Bang Theory.
That is correct. 3 points if you can somehow name it after just the first name, after the first part of the Knock Knock joke. I don't think we're going to have many 3 points, but I'm going to give you the opportunity and I'm going to give you a free guess at that 3 point crack.
Oh, okay.
If you don't get that, I'll give you the full who's there. After which the answer is worth 2 points. If you're still stumped, you can ask me for a hint. I will give you the year it debuted and the genre the show is. After that, 1 point.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Steel meal situation, please, Tara.
Oh, boy. It's been a while. Sarah D. Bunting has 11 steel meals. I have 12 steel meals. Valued guests have 7 steel meals plus Eric's meal.
All right. Wow. A lot of steel meals in the ether. Let's throw it to Pinky to see who will be going first.
We
will start with Tara.
All right, we're going to go Tara, Crystal, Sarah today. Are we ready to play Knock Knock?
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Tara.
Yep.
Knock Knock.
Who's there?
Cass.
Cass who?
Cass McGreedy's.
Sorry. Oh, it's Alice.
It is Alice. You are correct. That is Cass McGreedy. Kiss McGritz. All right. Crystal.
So that's 2 points, right?
2 points.
Okay.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Willie.
Willie who?
Willie Septus Rose.
Oh, is it The Bachelor?
It is The Bachelor. Will you accept this rose? Correct. Sarah D. Bunting. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Ida.
Ida who?
Ida Wanda Knox.
Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad, I am the one who knocks, correct? Dude. Back to Tara.
Wow, this is stupid. Yes.
This is great.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Justin.
Justin who?
Justin Moore Ting.
I need another hint.
It is a 1968 police procedural.
Oh, Columbo.
Columbo, just one more thing. Correct, 1 point. Back to Crystal. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Mo.
Mo who?
Mo Menta Zen.
Oh, is it The Daily Show?
Moment of Zen, correct.
Nice. Nice.
Back to Sarah. What? Oh, wait. Nope. Ah, fuck. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
What?
What who?
What Utah Kinnaboot.
Thanks, Picky. Different strokes.
Correct. And a Dave point for proper pronunciation.
All right.
Tara.
Yep.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Irving.
Irving who?
Irving Aloft.
Is extras?
Extras.
Ooh, nice.
Having a laugh.
Having a laugh.
Crystal, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Victor.
Victor who?
Victor E. S. Mine.
Is it Family Guy?
It is Family Guy.
Whoa.
Victor E. is mine, correct. Damn. Points. Sarah.
Yeah.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Depp.
Depp who?
Depp Lane.
Oh, Fantasy Island.
Fantasy Island, the plane, correct. Tara.
Yep.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Howie.
Friends.
Friends are first for a point.
Oh,
Howie
God.
Hugh Dune. How you doing?
Had to go for it.
Yep.
Nice. Right.
Crystal. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Gwyn.
Gwyn who?
Gwyn Torres coming.
Oh, Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, good for 2 points. Winter is coming. Sarah. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Les.
Les who?
Les B. Carrefour.
Can say again?
Les B. Carrefour.
I need another hint.
It is a 1981 police procedural.
Nope, that's not the right one. 1981 police procedural. I don't know.
Stu Mill situation. Les B. Carrefour out there. Hill Street Blues.
Oh, I heard Carrefour.
I was going to say
confused
Cop
Rock. Because so. I was like, chips? No.
Tara.
Yep.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Avery.
Avery who?
Avery Buddy Lees. Avery Buddy Lees.
Hint.
It is a 2004 medical procedural.
2004? Grey's Anatomy?
Incorrect. Pausing for a steel meal, not hearing it. That is 2004 House. Everybody Lies.
Oh, sure.
Oh,
Crystal, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Reg.
Reg who?
Reg N. Dairy.
Oh, is this How I Met Your Mother?
How I Met Your Mother, legendary, correct. All right, this is Sarah's last knock-knock before our halfway point and score break. Knock-knock, Sarah.
Who's there?
S. Sicily. S. Sicily.
Golden Girls.
You had to.
I did. Who's there?
S. Sicily Heinous. S. Sicily Heinous.
Heinous. I need another hint.
It is a 1999 procedural.
Oh, Jesus. Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
Yes.
It was like,
especially heinous.
Oh, my God.
And that takes us into our score break.
I got hung up on the anus.
Oh, boy, if I had a dime.
It would be in your anus.
It is a very close game. Sarah DeBunting has 7 points. I have 8 points. Crystal is in the lead with 10.
All right.
Oh, my God.
That was our halfway mark. Back to Tara.
Yep.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Dane.
Dane who?
Dane Gerbil Robinson.
Lost in Space.
Lost in Space. Danger Will Robinson is correct.
Danger Will Robinson. Oh,
Crystal.
Jesus Dickerson.
Crystal, this is question 17.
Spread Eagle.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Miss.
Miss who?
Miss Issa Way.
I don't.
Still got that hint if you need the hint.
Hint. I'll take a hint.
It is a 2019 sci-fi adventure show. Miss Issa Way.
This is going to be some Star Wars thing. I know it. I don't watch Star Wars.
I can't accept some Star Wars thing.
Well, that's as close as I can. Is it The Mandalorian?
It is The Mandalorian. Nice. This is the way. Correct. Sarah D. Bunting, knock, knock.
Who's there?
It's Non Una. You're Non Una.
Who's there?
Non Una New.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Mork and Mindy.
That is correct. Non Una New. This is question 19. It is for Tara. Knock, knock, Tara.
Who's there?
Mike.
Mike who?
Mike N. Whoopay.
The Newlywed Game.
Newlywed Games. Making Whoopi correct.
Nice.
To Crystal. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Hugh.
Hugh who?
Hugh Edie Ott. Hugh Edie Ott.
Oh, is it Ren and Stimpy?
Ren and Stimpy, you idiot.
Wow.
Correct.
Gorgeous. Nicely.
Sarah D. Bunting. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
M. Cumming.
M. Cumming who?
M. Cumming Elizabeth. M. Cumming Elizabeth.
Said that. Shit. I need the hint, please.
A 1972 sitcom. Kind of a junky one, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave. Sanford and Son.
Sanford and Son, that is good for 1 point.
I need your pity, and you accept it.
Tara, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Eula.
Eula who?
Eula Kim Arvelous.
Saturday Night Live?
Saturday Night Live, you look marvelous. Nice. Correct. Back to Crystal. Knock, knock, Crystal.
Who's there?
Matt.
Matt who?
Matt Link Kitts.
Oh, I need the hint.
It is a 1969 animated kids show. Otherwise known as a cartoon. Matt Link.
Oh, is it Scooby-Doo?
It is. Meddling Kids. Oh, Meddling Kids. Nicely done. To Sarah. L-E-L-L-E. L. The name.
Knock, knock.
L. Wait, knock, hang knock. On. Knock, knock, Sarah. Fuck me.
Who's there? Knock, knock.
I don't know if I can edit this out, but that's about the 17th time I forgot to say knock, knock. Maybe I'll just leave it in. Knock, knock, Sarah.
Who's there?
L.
Benson. L who?
L. O. Newman.
Seinfeld.
Yeah, that's good for 1 point. To Tara.
Yep.
Knock, knock, Tara.
Who's there?
Heidi.
Heidi who?
Heidi Lee Ho.
The Simpsons.
Yeah, you didn't let me finish. Knee. Borino.
And a stick on the Simpsons.
2 points. All right, Crystal. Knock, knock, Crystal.
Who's there?
Day.
Day who?
Day Kilkenny.
Oh, South Park.
South Park, yes. Day Kilkenny. Knock, knock, Sarah.
Who's there?
Megan.
Megan who?
Megan So.
Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yes, make it so, correct. All right, everybody's last question coming up, so let's get the scores, please, Star.
Oh, boy. Sarah D. Bunting has 13 points. Crystal and I are tied with 16 each, so potentially it still is anyone's game.
All right,
I
here
think I
we
actually
go.
Have 14. Doesn't matter. I'll lose. It's fine.
Knock, knock, Tara.
Yep, who's there?
Unger.
Under?
Unger.
Unger? Unger who?
Unger Katso.
Thundercats?
Thundercats ho! Yes! Unger Katso. That was my contribution to this game. You're welcome.
Shocking.
I liked it.
All right. Crystal, you needed this one.
Yeah.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Thatcher. Thatcher.
Oh, so we can guess, right?
Yeah, you can guess at the 3-point level free.
Thatcher. Is this Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Oh! Thatcher Fine Lancer.
Yeah!
Is that your final answer? Wow. 3 points.
Man.
Pulled it out at the end there. Amazing. All right.
Hail Mary.
Dirty Bunting, here is your last caller. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Wanda.
Wanda who?
Wanda B. Lee.
I need a hint.
It is a 1993 sci-fi drama.
Oh, Wanda B. Oh, good old Wanda B. X-Files.
X-Files, I want to believe. Yes, correct. Mm. All right, let's get the final score, Star.
Wow, that was very exciting. Sarah finished with 15 points. I had 18. Crystal is our victor for the episode and the season.
Amazing.
With 90 points.
What an end. Fantastic. All right, before we make this official, let's just do this tiebreaker that we do not need. We'll play it. First person to shout out the answer will win a stew meal for future use. Maybe we'll see what happens in the future. Who knows? Maybe it'll be a reset. Maybe it'll be something where you have to spend them on something dumb. Who's to say? Here we go. Knock, knock, everybody.
Who's there?
Who's there?
Weaver.
Weaver who?
Weaver Anna Blake. Friends. Yes, Sarah said Friends first. Weaver, guys. Anna Blake. We were on a break, Sarah, with that extra point. But today is
Valued Guests.
And the season.
Wow.
Oh, Jerry. You'll prop your feet up, but for now let's eat up. Be our guest, be our guest, be our guest. Please be
our guest. Woo! Wow. I think that is the second ever guest season victory. Mm-hmm. Well done, Crystal, for the capper of that. Well done, all our value guests of the season. Tara, how are you feeling about that defeat? You okay?
I'm just adding game time to my to-do list for next week.
That is true. All
sorry,
right, guys.
Sorry.
That is it for another extra hot great. We started at the end game before banking around the dial with stops at Severance, Married at First Sight, Rich Creamery Butter, Inventing Anna, Inside the Mind of a Con Artist, 911 Lone Star, and Reacher. Mike pitched us Cougar Towns, a one-story town for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Crystal, playing for Value Guest, was the winner of this week's Game Time from Dan. Next up, it's Law & Order recasting on Extra Extra Hot Great. And on the next EHG Prime, why it is Law & Order. Remember.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
I am the Queen.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Stupid Canadian kids in your holes.
And Crystal Farmer.
I got crabs in Gulfhaven.
Good one, shirt. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
I don't think you'd even need a chainsaw for that. That thing's so rotten, you could probably just karate chop right through it.
So when Tara asked me to be on the show, I was very excited, but then I got like very nervous, mostly, well, for two reasons. One, because I was terrified that I was going to get destroyed in game time, which like, I mean, I eventually just had to make peace with that.